A warmer friendly hello! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two in a few minutes because the first segment is going to be relatively short with the amount of games that we had on Thursday by Rocco Miller. He does great work over at Bracketeer.org. He does great work over at Basket Under Review, Field of 68, and so much more. We're going to be chatting with him about what we all saw in Feast Week, some of the early disappointments slash teams that have really been able to come out and have a nice start to the season. We're also going to be talking about some of the disappointing slash overachieving mid-major conferences as well. So very nice, well-rounded chat going to be had with Rocco there. And then we're going to take a look at some of the big games that we've got this weekend, some of the teams that have an opportunity to really prove themselves in the final segment. Going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to those in. First one is my Twitter slash X timeline at GU_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Well, I did not get in any Twitter slash X questions. Everything is powered by Better. That is BETR on Better, and Better is making it better than ever before to be able to get into the game with some daily fantasy. As all you need to do is go to BETR.app. You type in that promo code of VSIMPOD, VSIMPOD. That gets you $10 free to get all started and to get everything all gassed up. And all you need to do is take a look at a player, whether or not they're going to go under or over their stat line for the night, where jurisdiction have it, you're able to bet on some money lines and spreads as well, and boom, you're all good to go, and we are all good to go to take a look back at everything that we saw in a fun but small college basketball slate on Thursday, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
Looked like UW Green Bay was going to be able to get the win over Robert Morris, but that was not to be, as Robert Morris, they do find a way to persevere, get the job done, and yet a epic chair throw from Doug Gottlieb at the end of the game as well. 80-78 final in this one for UW Green Bay. Their lead scorer, Max Hall, did return in this one. He had 14 points for Green Bay. They go just 5 of 16 from 3, and for Robert Morris, the way that they were able to win this game was on the glass, as he had Nicholas Chatakoulis only provide 3 rebounds, but he had a big shot at the end of regulation with the game all tied up to be able to get the job done there, as Deshaun Good, he was good on the glass for Robert Morris. 18 points, 9 rebounds, and for UW Green Bay, they played even up with regards to the turnover battle, 11-11. Probably the most shocking result of the night, South Florida, they absolutely take it to Utah State, 74-61. This was actually a 21-point lead at that. Things got a little bit tighter in the second half, but Utah State just not able to get any offense going. They shoot 35% from floor for South Florida. They got a little bit slowed down in this one. They did turn the ball over 17 times, but they won the rebound battle 40-34. And Isaiah Nelson, a nice double-double, 11 points, 10 rebounds. Joseph Pignon, he was able to lead the way with 17 points. And MJ Collins, 19 points for Utah State, but really not a lot outside that. For Davidson, they do get the win, but they do not get the cover against the Citadel. This by a count of 79-63. As the Citadel, they shoot 50% from floor, only 5 of 20 from 3, but how about Davidson? 12 of 29 from 3-point range, as you had off the bench a really nice expose from Roberts Blums. He was able to go 4 of 7 from 3-point range, and then a 3 of 4 3-point shooting expose from Nick Koval as well. As for Davidson, the starters really didn't have the most rambunctious of games in this one. They had a combined 42 points, and off the bench they got 37 big ones, and then they were able to win the turnover battle in this game by a count of 14-6 as well. For anyone like myself who had the under in Long Beach State versus UC Santa Barbara, this was rough, as this game was 67-67 at the end of regulation. Turns overwhelming in overtime. Santa Barbara unable to get the cover, but they do get the win over Long Beach State, this by a count of 84-77. As for UC Santa Barbara, Ada Mahaney made his presence known in this one. He goes for 26 points, only 1 of 5 from 3, but 11 of 11 at the free throw line. Santa Barbara, 32 out of 38 at the charity stripe. They do lose the turnover battle 14-13, and for Long Beach State, they actually win the rebound battle 40-36. As for Long Beach State, the man that kept them in this game, Gavin Sykes, he was psyched out about being able to supply 24 points. And off the bench, Shaquille Bender, the transfer from the Metro Atlantic, he supplied 19 as well. Lots of Big West action that went down on Thursday. Now, I do have to do this before our game in Hawaii wraps up. I have to have this up by midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern. But we did see UC Irvine, Zaza for the Anteaters, get a nice 73-60 win over UC Riverside as they were really able to just pound them into oblivion towards back half of this one. As for Irvine, they went 10 of 18 from three-point range. UC Riverside, they're only able to go 5 of 20 from three-point range. So a nice win by the Anteaters. UC Riverside surprisingly was able to win the rebound battle in this game, this by a count of 41-38, but on the way that Irvine was shooting from three-point range, really no shot there. And for Irvine, laying about 12.5 points overnight, they close about 13.5, 14. Did depend upon your number on that one. Cal Poly, they do find a way to be able to get the job done and persevere over Cal State Fullerton, this by a count of 94-91, as you saw a three-point shooting expose in this one from Cal Poly. How about 18 out of 37 from three-point range? Peter Benjai, he goes off for 37 big points for Fullerton. 9 of 23 from three-point range himself, and for Cal State Fullerton, they've been much better in terms of taking care of the ball this season, but they did have 15 turnovers. They didn't win their turnover battle because he had 19 out of Cal Poly, but Cal Poly, they do have that big performance out of Benjai, so they do find a way to be able to get the job done out there, and also being able to get the job done. How about Cal State Northridge? 87-66 all over Cal State Bakersfield in this one. Roadrunners were not doing a lot of meatbin in this one, as they won 5 of 20 from 3 point range, and they lost a turnover battle 18-13. As for Cal State Northridge, you had Larry Hughes be able to slide 27 points, and Mohamed Fafana, Josiah Davis, they were able to chip in their 15 points apiece. And if you're taking a look at trend-wise what we're getting in college basketball right now, we had some overwhelming results in college basketball on Thursday, but if you take a look at overall for the season, the under is hitting at a little bit over 51%. 697 unders to 667 overs, excluding the Hawaii game. And favorites, they continue to cover the spread. They're hitting at about 51.3%, 697, 662, and 21 against the spread. And if you take a look at the last 7 days in college basketball, the favorites, they certainly have been cleaning house. 136, 121, and 8 against the spread. That's about 53%. And the under rate is about 53.5%. 139 unders, 122 overs, and if that serves me correct, 4 pushes. So that's where we're seeing college basketball right now, and that's where we're all getting trend-wise. Coming next, how about if we do chat it up with our good friend Rocco Miller, take a look at some mid-major fare, take a look at some of the surprise scenes, and so much more right here on Cusco Seats with myself, Craig H. Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is VSIN, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at CBBAnalytics.com. That is CBBAnalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Cusco Seats with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Rocco Miller aboard. He does a tremendous job over at bracketeer.org taking a look at this great game of college basketball. And this man is now all over the place because he's doing a great job with the mid-major show on the Field of 68. He's doing some great work over at Basket Under Review as well. You can also catch him selling hot dogs at a hot dog stand near you as well. You're able to follow him on the old Twitter/X at his first and last name, Rocco Miller, the number 8 altogether. And Rocco, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
That's a new one, Greg. I like that. Appreciate the intro. It's been a busy November, and I'm looking forward to this week. It's just getting settled in. I was in your town of Las Vegas over the weekend announcing the inaugural Resorts World Classic won by UC Santa Barbara. We had a great experience there. A lot of really good games. I think all four games we had were close games, with Santa Barbara edging out Seattle for the first ever championship. Now we're getting into more of a routine base now that MTE season is mostly behind us. Of course, we have the ACC-SEC challenge as we're witnessing, you know, throughout the midweek this week, and then some big time matchups sporadically throughout the upcoming weekend. So starting to get into a flow. We also have conference play. We saw Southland started on Monday with a big upset, Incarnate Word beating McNeese. And then, of course, the Big Ten getting off the ground on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we'll have the Metro Atlantic joining the party. I know the Horizon League's about to start as well. And the Big West will start on Thursday. So it really is starting to feel like, okay, results are coming in. Data's starting to slowly mature. And we're starting to see how these coaching staffs adjust to different levels of turmoil.
And how do you take a look at these conference games that we're getting right now? Because I do feel like they just have a little bit of a different tenor and a little bit of a different feel when you get them in early December. And it's just a way of the times with now having 18 and 20 game conference schedules. But to me, it always does feel just a little bit weird.
Yeah, it does. Well, and I think a lot of leagues don't have to do it. So it starts with the quantity of conference games that leagues want to take on. So at the highest level, the Big Ten preferring to play 20 games, the only way they can really make that work is to play a December window. And with the uniqueness of the geography within the Big Ten, you know, it makes sense for them to get these West Coast games in specifically early, as you see both the LA schools play both the Northwest schools over the course of the week. But so for them, that's just kind of part of the nature of the beast of trying to get the quantity of games in by the end. But yeah, the actual matchups have been really interesting. We saw USC and Oregon with no Rodney Rice due to a shoulder injury and no Nate Biddle still for Oregon really shook up how that matchup played out. I think the depth of USC proved to be the difference. They got a road win at Oregon. We don't know what Oregon's going to become. I think they've lost four straight now, a lot of it due to the injury situation. But those are things you would like to be able to get over and try out different things and be more mature by January before you're facing live bullets. And so that's a little bit of a consequence if you are Oregon. Washington and UCLA from that league. I'll say this, Tyler Bilodeau and Donovan Dent for UCLA have been banged up. Hans Steinbeck is probably Washington's most important player. I think from that standpoint, we're going to have injuries and hiccups throughout January and February as well. And that's not the point of me bringing all that up. My real point is just the fact that these staffs and these lineup combinations are pretty immature still. We don't know, you know, how they're going to adjust to the real live bullets. And so the coaching staffs have to be frustrated by having to play so early. You also see in the Metro Atlantic level, Sacred Heart will play Mount St. Mary's here on Wednesday. Mount St. Mary's this morning announcing four players being out. And so, yeah, it happens to every level. And you're just like, man, when these conference standings really come into play, these games here this week mean just as much as the ones the last week of the season. So it's a really interesting test, but everybody's got to deal with it if you're in one of these conferences.
Yep, they certainly will, and it is going to be interesting to see what we get out of those games, as Rocco Miller does such a great job over at bracketeer.org joining me on Cuscuz Hoops. And we're doing this as the ACC-SEC Challenge certainly has yet to come to a close, but we saw night number one, the ACC, make a big statement after last year. Well, it was not too much of a challenge. It was challenging for the ACC. They won two games in the entire challenge. I think that they won three out of either the first four or five to start with. And just how have you taken a look at this challenge? Because it just feels like the depth of the ACC that has been eluding them for so long, I would say 5+ years, finally feels like it's back for this conference.
Yeah, I think it's a big step forward for the league. There was a lot of programs, what I would call stuck in the mud last year. And you also, at the exact same time, the SEC, you know, the meat of the SEC, you know, obviously we know about those top four or five programs being elite. But once you get into the 6 through 16 teams, you know, like all those teams were capable of winning last year. Basically, all of them did. I think only Louisville and Duke won in this challenge last year en route to a 2-14 performance for the ACC conference. But this year, I mean, I think, you know, the results that really pop, Syracuse getting the big win over Tennessee, you have to start there. Again, it was a home game for Syracuse, and they did have, you know, some bright spots in Vegas, taking Houston to overtime, being mostly competitive. You could see the confidence through this win, through the way they celebrated last night, the post-game interviews. This Syracuse team really needed that win, first of all, but I think that this changes them going forward. Knowing that Tennessee is as solid of a program as there is anywhere in the country, let alone the SEC, getting them ready for ACC battles to come and really trying to prove that they can make a push towards an NCAA tournament appearance. Man, I get it. It's still not even the greatest resume win because it's a home win, but I think that could potentially due to their confidence with the Anthony family now involved, with the, you know, the veteran J.J. Starling still there. You know, he's a bona fide all-conference player if he's got his mind right and focused. And I think the guy that really just – I love his attitude and the way he brings it is William Kyle, number 42. You know, some of these big-time block shots and big-time dunks. That's the emotional leader that Syracuse has been missing. I grew up watching this program from the late 80s to now. And, I mean, I loved Eton Thomas. I loved Otis Hill. Those old-school Syracuse guys were really the key to getting the dome rocking 30,000 strong, or whatever it is, 25,000, 30,000 strong. Those days need to come back. They got a chance with this team to do that. Nate Kings has been an excellent player. I think he had 19 by halftime yesterday. So again, it starts with Syracuse, but the rest of the conference, Greg, you know, getting a big win by Miami at Ole Miss. I mean, I don't think a lot of people expected that one. Ole Miss going through their own problems, no doubt, but Miami being able to go into Oxford during a wild week in Oxford for football reasons and really kind of giving the fans even more reasons to be frustrated was impressive. That was really not a game that was in doubt down the stretch. Miami gets out of there with a 9-point win. That was really big. I think with Notre Dame being able to – the Notre Dame win over Missouri, that's one that, you know, I would say most people would agree Missouri's the better team on paper, but Notre Dame – pulled it together, built off of the Vegas experience, and got a really important win. And that one hurts Missouri a little bit. And then I think you see Duke, of course, survived against Florida, but they were expected to win. The Carolina win at Kentucky, I think, will age extremely well. That game was pretty ugly across the board. Somebody had to win. And for North Carolina to get a road win like that, I do think Kentucky will be much better in the future. That's going to age really well and be pretty important come March.
Yep, absolutely. And I do think that Kentucky has been one of the early season disappointments thus far. I think that they could be a little bit better moving forward, but they're a team that really stands out to me that I think that they've got a little bit of work to do when they do get guys healthy, as they're still dealing with the Jaden Quanten's injury. That's going to be helping out. But what about a few teams that you've been looking at, and whether it's to the positive or the negative, you've just been surprised for them. You've just been surprised by them, whether that be for the good or the bad.
On the bright side, you know, this team at Vanderbilt been tremendous. Now, again, they're going to have to back that up against SMU. That's a super intriguing matchup, as SMU's also been pretty good. But Vanderbilt performing like a Final Four level team, that's something that I don't think most of the national media saw coming. But I love the pieces that they built. What they were able to do against St. Mary's is just not something you see very often. I remember reading a stat that after the win, you know, scoring 96 against St. Mary's, not even Gonzaga can do that. So getting them out of the way they like to play, the speed in which Tyler Nickel, a.k.a. Okirky from Cornell, of course, Tyler Tannell, and Duke Miles has just been unbelievable. This Vanderbilt team, if they can stay healthy, of course, has the ability to compete for an SEC title, and I think that's a really big statement. I think Iowa State out of the Big 12, you know, we thought they would still be up there in terms of where they've been. And the Big 12 is, in general, is a huge story, in my opinion. The emergence of Colorado, TCU winning that event last week, Oklahoma State still undefeated. So a lot of the mid-pack teams have overperformed expectations in a big way. Even Arizona State being a team that can get to the Maui championship game. And then at the top here with the Cyclones, that's my main point. I did see Tamin Lipsey and, of course, Dom Nelson are banged up. But ideally, they are good to go for the showdown at Purdue on Saturday. Can't wait for that game, Greg. I think Iowa State with Josh Jefferson, the way he's played, Milan Momcilovic and Blake Buchanan, a lot of these pieces have really fit together nicely. And they've been simply dominant. They went to the players era and went a quiet 3-0 because the silly tiebreakers didn't allow the Cyclones to play for a championship. But the business that was in front of them, they handled, including that Syracuse team they beat by 30 plus. Again, because of the loudness of Michigan and Gonzaga, like, none of the media really focused on Iowa State, but that was a really impressive week for me. And I like the way the Big 12 has made a big move at a deeper conference. They've already passed the Big 10 in the power rankings for now. So this month will be big on the kind of the national level to see that. I would say more on the mid-major level, Greg. Teams that have really jumped out is George Mason. You know, we saw them dominate. That was a pretty good Cornell team that came in hot, and they just handled them like nobody's business, an 18-point runaway win. Every one of George Mason's games since the 6-point win over Winthrop in the first week, they haven't even been competitive. They beat FAU in their MTE championship game down in Daytona. Now they go to Virginia Tech Saturday, so a nice little test there. Love what we see from the Patriots this far. And then I also would just say, you know, the way, you know, Belmont is a team that's also undefeated, 7-0. A team I'm also kind of waiting to play a bigger game. They go to Middle Tennessee this weekend. So I think both those games are stiff tests for the Bruins. They, of course, went to the Fort Myers tournament last week and got the championship win in easy fashion over Toledo. They also went to Charleston and just popped the Cougars by 23 in a true road win. So I feel like, you know, Belmont continues to evolve and develop. They were my preseason Arch Madness pick because of their style of play and all the attention that goes to Tyler Lundblade. You can just kind of see it getting molded very well there, like Clay. The last team, I will throw in one more. I covered them last week, and I was on the call for one of their games, the William & Mary Tribe, Greg. We have to talk about how impressive they've been. Probably their most impressive win of all, going to Duquesne and getting a road win at an Atlantic 10 team. And again, they're doing all this since the second game of the Jacksonville Classic without Kyle Pulliam and without Reese Miller, both out pretty much indefinitely. Pulliam, I expect to maybe come back sooner than later. It could be concussion protocol. He had a gash in his face that they couldn't get to stop bleeding on the court. Took him to the hospital there in Jacksonville. Of course, didn't play in the second game. Reese Miller, I saw tweak his knee at the end of that first Jacksonville game. You never know with the knee thing. That could linger and linger and linger. We would hope both those guys can get on. My larger point, though, here, Mr. Peterson, is that this team 1-9, there's no drop-off. And that's been evident with the way they've played since they've lost both of these guys. They've now pounded Abilene Christian, pounded Old Dominion, and go to Duquesne. And they were almost a wire-to-wire win yesterday. I think Duquesne got a lead late, but William & Mary still able to persevere and win by 4. They go to George Washington Saturday. So again, all these teams I teed up for you with big games for you to look at on Saturday.
Absolutely. I love that you threw in there a Mr. Peterson to be able to get my attention. And man, we have been seeing a lot of great mid-majors thus far. And certainly it's going to be interesting to see what we get on Thursday as we're pre-recording this ahead of the Utah State versus South Florida game. That is going to be a fun one as well. And I do feel like some of these games over the next few weeks might be very important because we have been seeing a few of these mid-major conferences really be able to rise up. Like you were mentioning some of the teams out there in the Big West and the CAA has been pretty impressive. Sans Charleston, and there have been a few duds out there. Like Charleston has certainly been a team that I was expecting a little bit more from. I was certainly expecting more from Loyola Chicago. Finally got a win over Central Michigan, but man, that's been rough. And just how do you take a look at the tenor of a conference like the Atlantic 10 and the Missouri Valley Conference? Because I feel like those have been two conferences that have been a little bit hit or miss along with the Mountain West. Meanwhile, it's been the mid-major conferences that have been a little bit lower down the board that have actually overachieved this year.
First of all, just the A-10. Obviously, I mentioned George Mason already. I still think George Washington, despite falling twice in the Caymans, are a very loaded roster. They have to show their chops in learning from those losses. That's where it's a wait and see. Coach Caputo has never had a team this talented before. So this is really going to be an indictment on him either way, how this GW season goes. You know, St. Louis is a well-oiled machine. Fouled Stanford up by 3 late. One of the few times you see that backfire as Stanford made the first, got the purposeful miss to leak out to a 3, and they lose in regulation by 1. Heartbreaking. But St. Louis, obviously a well-oiled machine. They turned around, went to Loyola Marymount, got a big win in convincing fashion there. I feel like St. Louis's system is going to allow them to blow out the bottom half of the A-10, and that's going to help them a lot when it comes to power numbers, when it comes to overall confidence level and skill development. I also think, you know, some of the emerging teams of the middle of the league have helped the A-10 tremendously. St. Bonaventure looks extremely solid. Their only loss is to North Carolina. Davidson's overperformed. They get a huge test with St. Mary's this weekend, but again, Davidson much better so far than what people would have expected. Same with Richmond. And then, of course, you've still got VCU and Dayton doing what they're supposed to do. They've got a few losses each, but they've performed well, and they both picked up really good wins. Rhode Island's actually overperformed to what I expected, being 7-2 and not having a real egg laid yet. So really, the only disappointments are Loyola Chicago, which has been a major disappointment, and LaSalle and Fordham, of course, have been disappointments. St. Joe's is about where I expected them to be, just based on the fact that they had the late change at the top and trying to find their way through that. So no harsh comments for them. As you look at the WCC, Greg, you know, Pacific's been a team that came on the last few games. Really curious to see how they can play at Cal this weekend. That's a game I might actually try to go watch in person down the street from my house. If the Tigers can emerge, that's certainly going to help the league a lot. And that's been a little bit of a time bomb with Dave Smart. You know, eventually they're going to be good. Does he have the pieces he needs to do what he envisions for the Tiger program? That's wait and see. But they're clearly better than last year. We see that. Seattle University already has a huge win at Stanford. I just announced their games in Vegas, as I told you, Greg. I think long-term they're deep. They could actually be the fifth best team in the league. And so really good stories there. Loyola Marymount started hot. They've cooled a little bit. You'd like to think Washington State and Oregon State will turn it around, but they have some pretty poor records so far. That's been disappointing from the disappointing side. And I also think, I'll be fair to my local Dons here in San Francisco, disappointing showing in the Palm Springs event. They did have the nice Minnesota win, but they really need a bounce back. They have a tough schedule the rest of December with more chances. They'll go to Tupelo, Mississippi on the 7th to play Mississippi State. I think that's an opportunity for the Dons to get back on track with another power conference win. But obviously, Santa Clara has been a great story. Gonzaga, besides the Michigan embarrassment, has been great. And same with St. Mary's, besides the Vandy game. You know, overall, just conference-wide, it's a great question. You asked me a very loaded question. But conference-wide, first of all, I want to tip my cap to the Mid-American Conference. Last year, I think it was the worst MAC I've seen from top to bottom in 20 years. They've bounced back in a big way. You've got Buffalo undefeated, Greg, playing much better, much more talented team. Miami, Ohio's a team I got to watch in person in Jacksonville. They haven't been dominant, but they found a way to continue winning. Peter Suter's a special player, great competitor. They have a nice system they run, still undefeated there. You see Bowling Green, they went to Kansas State and just destroyed the Wildcats. Regardless of what's going on with Kansas State, like, that's big time for Bowling Green to be able to do that. Eastern Michigan won at Cincinnati. I mean, this is big time stuff here, Greg. Shout out to the MAC. They definitely deserve their flowers.
Yes, absolutely. And I was saying that last year as well. I was so disappointed by the MAC last year. It just didn't feel like they had a lot of depth. I was hoping for maybe a little bit more from Ball State at this point in the season. But I mean, past that, top to bottom, this is a much improved conference, other than maybe Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois has been a little bit rough as well. But I mean, still, you just take a look at where this conference is at from last year to this year, and that's so big. And how do you also take a look at some of these teams that have been up and down? Because I know you've highlighted the North Orleans Privateers, which I absolutely love that you've been in on that story, but the team that they knocked off 9-1 at TCU might be one of the most fascinating stories in all of college basketball, because I know you brought them to my attention prior to the start of the year. Disappointing night number one, but then they defeat the national champions from last year in Florida. They then actually almost take down Michigan as well. They do take down Wisconsin. There are just a lot of teams that it feels like is a little bit of a mixed bag right now, and while you've got these dominant teams like Michigan that have yet to take a loss, like a Purdue, a team like a TCU, I think is a team that's hiding in plain sight, that just because of one bad performance, they're being overlooked this early in the season when they're really playing some good basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. I think also in that realm, you know, Butler out of the Big East, really no expectations for Butler coming into the year. A few people had them bottom of the Big East, completely in last place projected. And all they've done is barely lose a heartbreaker, you know, the second Saturday of the season at SMU. And they go to their event and beat Virginia in the championship game. That was really impressive. They took on that Eastern Michigan team that had all the momentum, beating Cincinnati, and they handled them with ease. You know, they're up by 22 down the stretch, end up winning by 16. So now Boise State comes to Butler on Saturday, Boise State's behind the eight ball in terms of what their goals are. They'll get Boise State's best punch. But so far, Butler shapes up to be in the mix for an NCAA tournament at large bid. How cool is that? I mentioned Oklahoma State earlier. They're another team I put in that category that really didn't have a lot of expectations. Another one that, again, we're still trying to figure out if they're real or not, but it would be LSU. They were picked last in the SEC, or at least 15th, depending on where you look. But all they've done is handle their business so far. Again, they played, maybe their toughest home game was that New Orleans team. They were up for that game. They pounded them. And then they only got Drake and DePaul in their tournament. So we don't know for sure that this LSU start is real. But Texas Tech on Sunday, a Texas Tech team that is struggling. So if they connect with them here this week and Texas Tech continues to struggle, you know, LSU could get a big-time win there. And then they play SMU next weekend. So I'm intrigued by the start. They've been dominant enough to be like a top 20 performing team in the country. Let's see if they can back it up when they get the big-time opponent. And then I think you have to talk about Seton Hall, Greg. Seton Hall, 2 points away from getting to the Maui Championship game. They got the huge win over NC State. They clobbered Washington State in the third-place game. And so really, you know, their only loss right now is a 2-point loss to SC, who's still undefeated. They will play at Kansas State, a Kansas State team that's reeling this weekend, and they host Rutgers in a week, and that will be the end of their non-conference play. So if Seton Hall can go get those Kansas State and Rutgers wins, it's very conceivable that they enter Big East play at 10-1. And now, you know, they obviously need to be big NC State fans the rest of the year to make that win look as big as it did on the day that it occurred. In general, I think this team behind Shaheen Holloway, they're performing with the top 20 defense. They're forcing turnovers at an alarming rate at the fourth best in the country. They lead the country in block shots. They're third in steals. And this is like, to a T, the Shaheen Holloway formula. I think we all love watching this style of play. And this could be a really fun Big East story if they can continue to build on the early success.
Oh, I had zero expectations whatsoever for Seton Hall coming into the year. They have been very competitive. It's been a lot of fun to take a look at them. I was not sure why so many people were so down on Butler to start the year as well. They've been able to rise up, so that's been a lot of fun. We've got some nice surprises out there in the Big East. We've got some nice mid-major surprises, and you, my friend Rocco, are doing a great job of covering it all on so many different platforms. So let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Appreciate it, Greg. Always good to be on with you. I'm at Rocco Miller 8 on both X and Blue Sky. You can my website, bracketsheer.org. Bracket projections won't start till January, but we're going to continue to have special event coverage through myself and Robbie LaStella. Give him a follow as well. Doing a great job doing all these big events. He's going to be at the Jimmy V Classic next week. Look forward to having him there. UConn plays Florida and BYU plays Clemson in that. Over at Field of 68, we have the mid-major show Thursdays, 5 Eastern. Make sure to either turn that on or you can go back and watch or listen to the replay of the show. It's a great live production this year. We've had amazing guests. The last show we had right before Thanksgiving was Scott Cross from Troy. And then later that night, he went to a crazy triple overtime game with USC. So you never know what you're going to get.
They should have won that game too, man.
I know. And we had him on to celebrate the San Diego State win. He almost ended up with both wins. So anyway, we're having a great time with that show. Of course, on Field of 68 later this season, Bracketology, I'll be leading that show called Fielding the 68. And then at Basket Under Review, my main focus right now has been the Teams of the Week Awards, having a ton of fun with that. If you're interested in all 31 leagues, I'm literally giving out an award to one team on each league per week. And so make sure to check that out every week. This past week, our awards went to Michigan, TCU, McNeese, Vanderbilt, and Colorado, and that changes every week. So look for that, because I feel like there's a ton of great information about what's going on at all levels of college basketball. Appreciate everybody's support.
Absolutely. Rocco, one of the best in the business. This man is a grinder, taking a look at all these teams, all 365 of them. And every single time he joins me, he lends such great insight. So big thanks to Rocco for joining me on Cusco Superstar, part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I'll give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. And we're back here, Lovey Love. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by one of our good friends in Rocco Miller. He does such amazing work taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. He's over at Bracketeer.org, Basket Under Review, Field of 68. The man is all over, doing an incredible job, and every single time he joins me, he lends such great insight. So a big thanks to Rocco for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter / X feed at GUnit_81, and we're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games involving two bigger conferences with regards to the teams first, and then teams from these conferences. It only needs to be one team from these conferences involved in the game go at the bottom. This would be the Southland Conference, the NEC, the America East, the SWAC, the MEAC. I think we've covered all the ones that are going to be at the bottom for today. If I didn't say Big South, let's get things started with 867, 868 on the card. It is Iona, and they play host Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac is a underdog of 2.5 points. Dawn's game is 161.5. I'm in on the over. I did set a total of a 164.5. Right now, Iona has been really good at guarding the perimeter, but I think that they're doing for a little bit of regression with the fact that teams are shooting less than 27% from three-point range against them, and it's an Iona team that's looking to fly. They are 24th in the country in terms of total possessions. Brame, CJ Anthony has been a nice find coming over from Cincinnati. 16.5 points, 6 assists, shooting 42% from three-point range, and then you've had Keshawn Williams, who I remember he was a really good scorer a few seasons ago over at Northern Illinois, be able to fly the team with about 10 points per game with this Iona squad. They haven't necessarily been able to pull in there a lot of second and third chances outside the top 200 with regards to their offensive rebound percentage, so I do think that Quinnipiac is going to have a little bit of an edge there. This was a number that opened up more around about 4 or so, and if we could get a 3+, I'm going to be in on Quinnipiac because I did set my number at a 2.5. So on the 2.5, wait and see, but if we can get back to that opener, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Quinnipiac as they've done a solid job down low. Right now, they're a top 225 team in terms of rebound percentage. Amari Monroe is back from a season ago. 3.5 steals, 6 boards, 16 points per game. You've got Samson Riley right now shooting 67.5% for 3. That is going to be going downward, and for Quinnipiac, I think that there's a little bit of regression doing for them shooting 38.5% for 3 last year outside the top 250 with regards to their 3-point shooting percentage, but also some positivity to the fact that they're right around about 300th in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage, and it is a Quinnipiac team that they've been outside the top 200 with regards to their own 2-point shooting percentage down low, but they've been able to do a better job of taking care of the ball. They're turning the ball over only about 12 times per game. You've been able to get some good production out of the freshman in Keith McKnight at 6'7", 11 points, 4.5 boards. He's been a nice unexpected find for this team, and then you do have size with someone like Spencer Weiwei, who comes over from the UK. He's actually been able to give the team only 3.5 points, but 6.5 rebounds per game. It's a Quinnipiac team that they themselves are looking to play fast. They are 101st in the country in terms of total possessions per game, so I do think that's going to be a little bit more of an up and down game. If I could get 3+, I'm going to be in on the points with Quinnipiac, and with regards to total, so I might add a 164.5, so I like the over. 869, 870 on the card. It's East Tennessee, and they are going to be playing us to South Alabama. South Alabama, an underdog of 4.5 points. Dawn's game is 140.5. I'm going to be in on the under. I did set my total 135.5. This is despite the fact that both offenses have been very efficient. South Alabama, right around about 123rd in the country in terms of points per possession. East Tennessee State, they've been a top 115 team, but you do have a South Alabama team that plays ridiculously slow. They're outside the top 320 in terms of total possessions per game. And for ETSU, this has been a rock solid defense that has been a top 40 bunch in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And the way that you really attack this South Alabama team is by knocking down threes. South Alabama is forcing opponents to take over 61% of their field goal attempts from three-point range. That is on pace to be the highest percentage of shots being taken from three this decade. And for ETSU, they're shooting about 32.5% from three. It's middle of the road in college basketball. It's not great. It's not terrible. They've got Jalen Smith. He comes over from North Florida, giving you about 11 points, 3 assists, 2.5 steals per contest. I like the add of Brian Taylor from SIU Edwardsville. He and Cam Morris have both been able to give you 15 points apiece. Morris comes over from UMass Lowell, and Typically with ETSU, they're just an absolutely dominant team on the glass. They're still solid, but they haven't been able to pull in quite the second and third chances that they have in the past. And this is a South Alabama team that they themselves are not really going to give themselves a whole bunch of second and third chances outside the top 200 in terms of offensive rebound percentage. They don't put you on the free throw line at all. They're allowing opponents to shoot 10 free throw attempts per game. That is by far number one in all of college basketball. So they do a great job there. You've got pretty much the Division II All-Stars coming in. Peyton Law has been able to give you 13.5 points, 6 boards. This program just does a really good job of finding these on D1 guys. Adam Olson, 16 points. He's been able to shoot 40% from three. South Alabama's old. They're shooting about 34.5% from three, and they've taken great care of the ball. They're a top 35 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, but do think that this is going to be slow and controlled with ETSU. I do think that they're going to be able to do a little bit of a better job on the glass here. This is a South Alabama team, as it has been outside the top 240 in terms of defensive rebound percentage, and I think that ETSU makes just enough threes to be able to get the job done on the spread. I set my line at 5.5, so willing to lay up to 5 with ETSU, and did set that total out of 135.5. I'm also in on the under. 871, 872 on the card. Fairfield is on the road. They're facing off against Manhattan. The Jaspers are a 1-1.5 point favorite. 157.5 is the total, and I set a total of a 148.5. I'm in on the under. Now, Manhattan has been a bottom 30 team in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but their total possessions per game, I feel like it's a warped stat. They've gone to overtime already in a few different circumstances, including that wild and crazy Wagner game. That's a big reason why currently in terms of total possessions per game, you're seeing them checking in more around about 92nd in all of college basketball. I think that they're a little bit slower than what they've shown, and this is not a Fairfield team that's really going to push a ridiculous tempo. They're a mid-tempo team, about 166th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and while Fairfield does a really good job in terms of keeping things clean, not really turning the ball over, only about 10 turnovers per game, they don't shoot it well. They're outside the top 220 in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. They're outside the top 300 in terms of their two-point shooting percentage. Doing a great job on the offensive glass. Top 100 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots. They have resulted in an offensive rebound as Brandon Benjamin. He's been able to give you 9 boards, 2 blocks, 12.5 points per game. But that said, I do think that with Manhattan, they just barely find a way to be able to get the job done here. I recognize that they're still without their main man, Will Sidner, from a season ago. But this is a Manhattan squad that has been able to do a pretty rock solid job of bombing it from 38.5% from the outside. Do think that sees a little bit of regression, but Jaden Winston, he and Devin Dinkins in the backcourt have been able to combine for about 30 points per game. You've got Winston give you about 2.3 steals per contest, and with Frazier Knight at the Roxborough last season, he shot 47% from 3, 36.5% this year. He's a 6'7 combo player. That's giving you about 13.7 rebounds. Now, they are allowing a lot of second and third chances. This Manhattan team has been outside the top 300 in terms of their defensive rebound percentage, so they certainly need to tighten up the screws a little bit there, but I do think that they're going to do so. And with this Fairfield team, it has been a team that has been a little bit hit or miss in the backcourt. Right now, you just don't have really that one main facilitator, as Brandon Sparks, he's giving you 2.5 assists, 16 points per game, but I mean, it's really been facilitation by committee when he's been out there. Cam Estevez, who has missed a pair of games, he's been able to give you about 2 assists per contest. Deuce Turner down for what is giving you 12 points per game. I do think that this is going to be a little bit more of a mid-tempo game. So by total 148.5, I like the under, and with Manhattan, I'm going to be willing to lay up to a deuce with them. 873, 874 on the card. It is St. Peter's, and they're going to be playing us to Canisius. Canisius does find themselves as a pretty good size underdog here. You're going to be catching 6.5 to 7.5 points with them. 133.5 to 134.5 is the total. That's at a total of 136.5. I'm in on the over. Now, for St. Peter's, they're currently outside the top 240 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Very uncharacteristic of them. Canisius, out of 365 Division I schools, they're actually 365th in terms of total possessions per game, and yet they're giving up over 70 points per game. This is a not so efficient defense, to say the least. Brian Najonga has been able to give you 12.5 points. He's shooting about 41% from the outside. I like what he's been able to bring to the table. And then Michael Evabrow, he comes over from Central Arkansas, spent some time out there in the MAC prior to that. 8.5 points, 6 boards. So this has been a Canisius team that's been much better on glass than they have been in past seasons, but they're just really not doing a great job in terms of actually guarding the inside shot, as they're pushing a lot of things to the outside because their 3-point shooting defense has been halfway decent, but they are outside the top 350 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage, and that's a big reason why I did set St. Peter's here as an 8.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number with St. Peter's. This has never really been a team that was going to go bombs away from 3-point range or anything like that, even though they're not shooting at the worst percentage, but still they're outside the top 275 with that regard. Brent Bland, he's been able to shoot 40% for 3 at 9 threes per game. He's been able to supply the team with 17.5 points, 5 rebounds per game, and then you've got Bryce Eaton eating it up with about 8 points, 3.5 assists per game for St. St. Peter's. They traditionally are a team that's very sloppy with the ball. They've been turning the ball over about 15 times per game, but you've also got a Canisius group that has not really generated turnovers whatsoever ever since Jim Christian has taken over. They're back outside the top 330 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and with St. Peter's uncharacteristically outside the top 300 in terms of opponents' 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage, I do think that that improves a little bit, but even though it's going to be a lower possession game, I do think that you get an over here because Canisius, they're very inefficient with regards to their defense as well, so I think that you get a slow and controlled over, semi-total 136.5, and with St. Peter's, I'm willing to lay up to 8 with them. 875, 876 on the card. It is Marist, and they play us at Mount St. Mary's, and the Mount finds themselves as a 9 to a 9.5 point underdog total on this game. It is 133.5, and with the Mount, I did set them as a 9.5 point underdog, so 9 or less, I am going to be willing to lay it with Marist. It's a Marist team that over the last 2 years, they've been a top 25 team in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage, and it's a Mount St. Mary's team that has really not been able to light it up from 3-point range this year. Right now, they're shooting about 34% from the outside, which is not bad, but the Achilles heel for this team, turnovers. 17 turnovers per game while being well outside the top 175 in terms of total possessions per game, so they just have a lot of dead possessions, and they themselves are a bottom 5 team in terms of generating turnovers as well. They are turning the ball over nearly 8.5 times more per game than their opponents. That is a big issue. Even though you've got Arlandis Keys giving you about 13 points, he's shooting 40% from 3. You've got Luke McKeldin, who stands 6'10". He's been able to give you 6.5 boards, 12.5 points per game. This team is just not doing the little things well, and for Mount St. Mary's, typically this is a team that does a good job on glass. They're outside the top 300 in terms of percentage of their missed shots. That results in an offensive rebound, and for Marist, they're back in the top 75 with regards to their rebound percentage. You've been able to have Rajon Blackwell come up from the non-D1 ranks, give the team 14 points. He's right now shooting in the mid-30s from 3. Marist a little bit improved with that 3-point shooting percentage, and I mean, they're allowing teams to shoot 22% from 3. That is certainly going to be going northward. That's not a sustainable number, but they're always very rock solid down low. You're not going to be able to get a lot of opportunities if you're Mount St. Mary's, and Justin Menard has been able to do a nice job doling it out. 4 assists, 4 boards, 9 points per game to only about 2.5 turnovers per game. Jaden Collins is back from a season ago with about 8.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game as well. So this is a circumstance where I do think that Marist is going to do a nice job holding up with their defense. This is once again a Marist team that is very nice, slow, controlled in terms of total possessions per game, 3.9. So I did set a total here of a 131.5. I'm in on the under, and I'm willing to lay up to 9 with Marist. 877, 878 on the card. Siena is going to be playing us to Niagara. Niagara is a 13.5 to a 14.5 point dog. Thought this game is 131.5. I did set my line at 11.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on Niagara. I recognize that things are less than savory for Niagara. They lose pretty much 9 out of their top 10 scores from a season ago, and Niagara is built around 3-point shooting. They've had to mix and match with a lot of non-D1 guys to be able to help out there, and they're only shooting about 32% from 3. Big issue that you have for Niagara. They are not hitting the boards whatsoever. They're a bottom 10 team in terms of percentage of their own missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. But Justin Page, he seems to be paging in with 12.5 points, 2.5 assists, only shooting about 30% from 3. But Trenton Walters, along with Reggie Podome, these two guys have been able to combine for 18 points per game. Both are shooting above 42.5% from 3-point range. And I do think that that's going to have a little bit of success against the Siena team, has been very slow in control. Both of these teams outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. Siena as well outside the top 310. And with Siena, they're trying to force things inside. They're a team that is in the top 20 in terms of lowest percentage of shots for field goals by opponents that come from 3-point range. They themselves have been shooting 25% from 3. That should be going northward. You've got an Niagara team that's currently outside the top 300 in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage, but and it's right now just a cold team in general. You don't have a single guy on the roster for Siena shooting above 33% from 3, and that guy is Antonio Chandler that's shooting 33% from 3, and I think that he's 1 of 3 from 3-point range thus far this season. Gavin Doty, he's been able to give you 15 points, 5.5 boards, but not necessarily a guy that's going to light you up from 3. I like Justice Schultz in the backcourt, 5 assists, but he's been having 3 turnovers per game as well. This has been a Siena team that has been a top 125 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, so they've done a pretty solid job there. Brendan Coyle, he's back from a year ago, 10 points, 4 boards per contest, but I just don't know if Siena's going to be able to break away in this game. For Siena, they just have been a little bit disjointed in the backcourt. They've dealt with a few injuries to Reed Descharme and company as well, so I do feel like this is a little bit too lofty of a number in a game where I think it's going to be an almighty slog. I did set my total at a 131.5. Right now, I'm seeing between 131.5 to a 132. At the 132, I'm in on the under, and I'm willing to take those points with Niagara. 879-880 on the card. It is VCU, and they play us to Samford. Samford is an underdog of 19 points, and your total is 150. And for VCU, go ahead and set this line at 16.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Samford. Samford certainly has their issues. This is year number one under Lenny Acuff, who comes over from Lipscomb. He's brought a few guys with him. The main one, Dylan Faulkner, a 6'9" big man who's been able to give the team about 14 points, 5.5 boards. So he's been able to do a solid job there. And then you've got Norris Squared, who comes on over from pretty much Horizon League. Keaton Norris has been the main guy, 4.5 boards, 5.5 assists, 12 points per game. But it's all been about Jaden Booth right now. He's supplying the team with 18.5 points per game. Has come on down from the 91 ranks, and he has been rock solid for a Samford team that is pedestrian with regards to their offense. They're shooting 32.5% from three. The one thing that they're doing well, though, is they're not turning it over. This has been a top 50 team in terms of ball security. They're turning the ball over less than 10 times per game. Now, they're outside the top 300 in terms of generating turnovers as well, so it's sort of a make-it-a-take-it sort of style, but they've also been a top 125 team in terms of not allowing second and third chances, so they are doing a great job with regards to one-and-dones. For Samford, not a team that's necessarily pushing tempo, 169th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. VCU is. This is year number one for them in the new regime of Phil Martelli Jr., and right now they're about 59th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And for VCU, it's been a little bit more holes greater than some of its parts rather than anything else, because you don't have a single guy that's averaging above 12.3 points per game. That said, right now you've got 9 different guys that are giving you at least 4.9 points per game. Jadarian Tracy, who comes over from Oregon, has been that main scorer, 12.5 points. He's shooting 42% from 3 points. Team as a whole shoots 35% from the outside. It's been a little bit sloppy with this team because you don't necessarily have that main facilitator, though. 13 turnovers per game. Now, VCU, a top 125 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, but that said, they've also been a top 50 team in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. With Samford, they've had a few struggles with regards to that three-point shooting, so it does make for a little bit of an interesting circumstance. I do think that you get an up and down game, and I do think that Samford, who's been very cold shooting to begin the year, they start to get a little bit more online. So I did set a total of 154.5. I do like the over and the points here with Samford. 881, 882 on the card. What's supposed to be Georgia State versus Kennesaw State, this is a game that's now going to be played on Saturday instead of Friday, so this is a skip. We move on. 883, 884 on the card. Gonzaga, they're going to be on the road. They're facing off against Kentucky, and Big Blue Nation is a 3.5-point home underdog. Turn on this game, 157.5 to a 158.5. I said Kentucky is a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the money line. Now, I do think that both of these teams are going to be seeing some improvement with their 3-point shooting. You've got both of these teams right now outside the top 170 in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage. Gonzaga is actually shooting worse than Kentucky from 3-pointers right now. Kentucky, 33.6% from the outside. Gonzaga, 32.2%. And you've got two teams that have been very good on the boards. Kentucky, 18th in terms of rebound percentage. Gonzaga is 16th. I do think that home court advantage is very big. On a neutral court, I would be setting Gonzaga as a favorite, even though we saw them get dump trucked against Michigan. But past that game, they've looked rock solid. For Kentucky, they do have the losses on their resume, three of them in total, and the game against Michigan State was a little bit less than tremendous, but I still think that this team is going to be able to do a nice job in terms of running good, clean offense, even with them shooting it cold from three. They've been 30th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. You've got Malachi Moreno doing a nice job down low, 10.5 points, 8 boards. They've needed it because Mohamed Diabate has missed each of the last three games, but Denzel Aberdeen, Ortega Owe, they've been able to do a nice job flowing good, clean offense, a combined 6 assists. Both of these guys have been able to give you 13.5 points per game a piece, and then Jasper Johnson has been able to shoot about 36% from 3-point, so I do like what he's been able to bring to the table. On the flip side for Gonzaga, this has also been a very balanced team. You don't necessarily have the same 3-point shooting as a season ago, but Adam Miller, I think, is going to be able to heat up. He's been able to get the team 9.5 points per contest from 3. He's only shooting about 31%. After last year over at Arizona State, he shot more than that neighbor at about 40% from 3-point. Mario St. Cypre, who comes over from overseas, 8.5 points. He's really been their hot 3-point shooter at 45% from the outside. Graham Ike is a load, 15 points, 8 boards, 2.5 assists. He's one of the best big men that you're going to find in all of college basketball, but it's actually Braden Huff who's giving you 16 points per game that is leading the way. And for Gonzaga, typically this is a team that you think of, and you think of that high-octane offense, and you think of a team that has been relatively suspect, to say the least, on defense. They're actually better on defense right now rather rather than offense. They're ninth in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Gonzaga currently just outside the top 25 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. So I do think that that's an interesting dynamic. I do think that both of these offenses get cranked up a little bit more. And this is a Kentucky team that has really slowed themselves down from a season ago. I do think that they're going to be playing a little bit faster moving forward. 161st in the country in terms of total possessions. Brame and Gonzaga is checking in 36. So I did set a total here of a 160. I like the over, and I do like Kentucky. All right, on the money line, 885, 886 on the card. UAB is on the road against Drake, and the Drake finds themselves as a bit of a favorite here of 2.5 points. 146.5 is the total, and set total of a 147. So 146.5 is my max buy point on the over, but it is a buy point on the over with UAB. This is a unit that is back inside the top 100 in terms of total possessions. Brame, Drake is once again playing very slowly. Not quite as slowly as they did a season ago, but the Drake is right now 317th of the country in terms of total possessions. Brame and UAB, actually, with their last game, they're now 113th in the country in terms of total possessions. Brame, but still a team that under Andy Kennedy, they do like to fly a little bit more. You've got Chance Westry, who's been able to fly 16 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, but for UAB, the big thing is that they're shooting 27.5% from 3. This is not a particularly good 3-point shooting team. They should see a little bit of a rise with this regard. You bring in Jacob Meyer, Fred DePaul, he's done a nice job supplying this team with about 15.5 points per game. Daniel Rivera, Ahmad Robinson, they've been able to combine for about 23 points per game, and I mean, right now, Rivera has been able to really do a nice job in terms of supplying those 7.5 rebounds per game as well. UAB, traditionally a really good team in terms of the turnover battle, and they are once again this year top 75 team in terms of taking care of the ball, only about 10 turnovers per game. They've been a top 150 team in terms of generating turnovers as well, doing a nice job dominating the offensive boards. But this is a Drake team that, with their slow and controlled style, they've done a nice job in terms of winning that turnover battle as well. This is a top 40 team in terms of taking care of the ball. They're shooting as a collective 37% from three. A little bit cold to begin the season, but Jalen Quinn has been able to come on strong from Loyola Chicago. He's been able to give you 17.5 points, 4 assists per contest. You've got Jashawn Thomas, who's able to give you 11.5 points per contest. He's right now shooting 42% from three. Brandon Appelhans, he's right now shooting 49% from three. We'll see that go down a little bit, but Wilkins Jr. Exacte, along with Aku Frederico, have been able to combine for about 13 rebounds per game. So with this Drake team, even though they're not pulling in there a lot of offensive rebounds, they themselves have been able to do a nice job not allowing their opponents to be able to get a lot of second and third chances as well. And they've been a top 75 unit in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. That's big against a UAB team that is very much looking to pile drive the ball down low. So I did set a total here of a 147. I think that late game falling gets you over. So like the over, and I'm willing to lay up to 2.5 with the Drake. 887, 888 on the card. Cincinnati. And yes, we're on to Cincinnati. They're under the road facing off against Xavier. Xavier is a 1.5 point favorite. 144.5 to a 145.5 is the total. And I said Xavier is a 4-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Both of these teams have had shaky starts to the season on offense, to say the least. Xavier had just a really bad first few games, but now they're really starting to get it going. Cincinnati just is on 238th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, while Xavier is more around about 143rd. And the Cincinnati team has been good on defense. Like, Cincinnati is a top 40 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. They're really good down low. I know that they've dealt with a few injuries, but they've gotten back Boba Miller. Jalen Celestine was dealing with a little bit of an injury. These two guys should be good to go. And Miller has been a double-double machine. 14 points, 10 boards, 2 blocks. He's able to pop it from 3 at 6'10", but he's popping it at 12%. Day-Day Thomas is right now shooting 50% from 3. We should see a little bit of regression there, but I mean, he's one of two guys that are averaging more than like 3 points per game. They're shooting above 30% from 3-point, but stop a team down low has been able to give you 7 boards, 2 blocks per contest. So the Cincinnati defense is doing a nice job. For some reason, they're right now in the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game. I really don't know why Cincinnati has sped themselves up. Wes Miller wanted to, but it's clearly not working out for them. Xavier's been a little bit more of a mid-tempo team, and for Xavier, where they've been able to win has been on the inside. They've been a top 50 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage. You've got Trey Carroll caroling all the way to giving you about 16 points, 5.5 boards, 3 assists, shooting 39.5% from 3. Team as a whole shooting 38.5% from the outside. I don't know if these guys are quite that amazing, especially Allwright, who comes over from Valparaiso, where he's a little bit more of a distributor than anything else. He's right now shooting 50% from 3. I should see a little bit of a fall off, but I like what you've been able to get out of Jovan Misevic, who's been able to give you 12.5 points, 4 boards, good versatility. You've also got a few other guys that come in from New Mexico who have been able to do a nice job, like Phil Brockovan. He's been able to do a solid job down low with about 7.5 boards, and he's also given you 3.5 assists per game. This has been a nice team in terms of just distributing by committee. Xavier, top 50 team in terms of taking care of the ball, and I do think that that's going to be able to win out. Now, Xavier, 351st in terms of their overall 2-point shooting percentage, so they're probably going to look to cast away quite a bit from three, and that's where Cincinnati, in my opinion, opinion, is a little bit more vulnerable. And I just don't know if Cincinnati feels good, clean offense with the way that they're turning the ball over 14-plus times per game. So set a total of 144. I like the under, and I'm willing to lay it here with the X-Men. 889, 890 on the card. TCU, they play us in Notre Dame. And Notre Dame finds themselves as a mid-tier underdog here of 5.5 to 6.5 points. 139.5 is the total. And set a total of 138. I'm in on the under. Neither of these teams are necessarily going to be looking completely gunned. TCU has been playing a little bit more up-tempo here in recent games. They're up to about 90th in terms of total possessions per game. A little bit of a byproduct of playing against Florida and also Wisconsin, a pair of teams that they're looking to run a little bit more. Meanwhile, you've got a Notre Dame team that they like to keep things nice, slow, and controlled. Notre Dame right now, in terms of total possessions per game, they're checking in more in the neighborhood of 298th in the country. And Notre Dame is going to have the best score in this game. Marcus Burton was able to supply 20 points per game last season. He's right on pace to do that once again this year. The question is, what are you going to be able to get out of the ancillary guys, as this Notre Dame team finally has some good rebounding, as they brought in a guy that I really liked over at Northern Arizona and Carson Tout. Only about 5 points per game, but 10.2 boards per contest, so he's been pretty much a designated rebounder to help likes of Jaron Harrelson, who's been that number 2 scorer with 13 points per game. Brennan Shrewsbury is able to bomb it from 3 at 44% from the outside. And with this Notre Dame team, traditionally they do a nice job in terms of taking care of the ball. The 11.5 turnovers per game, it's not amazing, it's not bad, but on the other end, you do have a TCU team that has really been able to get after it on the defensive side of things. They had that less than savory night number 1 game against New Orleans. That was just a Murphy's Law game where they went like 3 of 27 from 3-point range, and New Orleans, despite the defense being pretty rock solid, they were just able to make their threes. And for TCU, they're obviously going to be a better defensive team rather than an offensive team. Right now, TCU just 140th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, while being 17th in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. But I do think that they do a nice job of standing up to Tout down low with David Punch giving you that punch. 12.7 boards, 2.5 assists per game. It is a TCU team that has also been a top 50 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They're within the top 80 in terms of 3-point and 2-point shooting percentage defense as well. Not a team that's lighting it up from three other than Jaden Pierre, 44% 3-point shooter, about 11 points per game. And then Brock Harding, he does a nice job doling out good clean offense, not really lighting it up from three, but 10 points, 6 assists, 3.3 steals per contest. I do think that in a control game, TCU finds a way to be able to get the job done. I set them as a favorite of 8 points, so willing to lay with TCU, and I'm in on the under. This is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the extra games, 891, 892. It is San Diego, and they're on the road against San Jose State. Old San Jose State is a 7-7.5 point favorite. Total on scheme is 143.5, and I'm going to be willing to take the points with San Diego. I think I, out of character, called them San Diego State, but the Toreros I'm going to be willing to take here, because with San Jose State, out of 365 Division I teams, they are 365th in terms of the opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. Now, I recognize that San Diego is very much looking to take quite a few threes. They're outside the top 150 in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage, and this has been a team that has been a little bit rough on the boards. For San Diego, you don't have a single guy that gives you over 5 rebounds per game, as Hassan Diop has been your top rebounder with about 4.5 boards per game, but you have to love what you're getting out of Tyler Johnson, who's been able to supply about 12 points per game, dealt with a little bit of an injury, but he should be good to go. Tunari Lane, Juan Sebastian Guadacito have transferred into the program. They're combining to shoot about 40% from 3, 11 points apiece out of these two guys. And for San Jose State, this team has had a really tough time taking care of the ball, about 287th in the country in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. San Diego has been a team that's been relatively okay in terms of generating turnovers, and for Kobe Garland, he's had to be the head of the sink right now for San Jose State, and he's been a good one, shooting 40% from 3, 4 assists, 17.5 points per game. You've got Yafat Mundi, who's been good on the glass, 9 rebounds, 11 points per game, but again, you're just allowing too many open looks from 2-point range, even though you've got Cedric Nananano, who's been in the program for a while, giving you about 6 rebounds per game. That's been a little bit unsightly. San Jose State has actually been a team that's been able to haul in there some second and third chances. They've been a top 175 team in terms of their offensive rebound percentage. You're really not going to get these teams to really run it and gun it, though, with the San Diego team. They're about 266th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. San Jose State is very content to play slow. They're currently 348th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. I do think that this is going to be close enough for some late game felling. I did set my total here at a 143.5 right now, seeing between 143.5 to a 144.5. At a 144 plus, I'm in on the under, and I do like those points with San Diego, and now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-56 367, 306, 568. Lafayette and Mercier is due battle, and Lafayette, the home team, is between a pick 'em to a 1-point dog. 130.5 is a total, and with Mercier's, I did set them as the 1.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to one with them with this Lafayette squad. It does feel like things are just a little bit disjointed with this team after they, a season ago, did lose some of their main backcourt pieces, as this team was a much better three-point shooting team a season ago when you had a guy that was lighting it up at like 44-45% in Alex Shulkin, who's now over at UC San Diego, and you lose your main big man in Justin Vanderbilt. As a result, you've only got two guys on the roster that give you over 3.7 rebounds per game. Christian Humphrey Rembert has, as a freshman, been able to give you 7 points, 5.5 boards per contest, and Sharif Jackson, another freshman, 6 rebounds per game, but it is also a unit that has been allowing a lot of open looks down low outside the top 275 in opponents' two-point shooting percentage. They themselves are outside the top 340 in terms of their own two-point shooting percentage. Now, they shoot 33% from three. Caleb Williams has been around the block. He's been able to give you about 16 points per game, shooting 38% from three. Mark Butler, Ryan Petit, these are two guys that aren't necessarily giving you a ton of scoring, but you know what? They're doing a pretty okay job there, but this is a Mercier's team that they like to play nice, slow and controlled. They're outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. It's a Mercier's team that was actually okay in terms of guarding the perimeter last season. This year, they've been allowing teams to shoot less than 32.5% for three. Mercier is actually checking in 151st in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Lafayette more around 295th, and I do think that for Mercier, having Bernie Blunt in the backcourt, I think is the best score in this game. 16 points, 2 assists. He's shooting 36.5% for three. Mercier, as a whole, only shoots about 30.5% from three, but the versatility of Mykolas Ivanauskas, who at 6'8", he's shooting 33% from three. He's giving you about 6 boards, 7 points per game. I do think that that's going to win the game for a Mercier team that has been a top 200 team as well in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Now, they've been way over aggressive with their fouling. They're a bottom 20 team in terms of fouls committed on a per possession basis, but also a top 100 team in terms of opponents 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage. I think that this is going to be a control game. Did set my total at 131.5, so we'll wait for a little bit of movement here. 131 or less and on the over, 132 or higher the under, but I'm going to lay up to one here with Mercier. 306-569, 306-570. What can Brown do for you? Well, Brown plays Elsa Bryant, and if they win by more than 5 points, they'll make you more. Brown is a 5-point favorite. Total on this game is 129, and I did set a total of 132. I do like the over for Bryant. This has been a very inefficient offense. They're currently outside the top 300 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, but it's also an inefficient defense for Bryant right now in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. They're checking in about 167th in the country. This has been a Brown defense that has been a top 100 team in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. You've got a Brown unit that is currently well outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game, but I do think that there's reason to believe that this offense is going to improve. Obviously, losing Keno Lilly from the backcourt from a season ago has left them a little bit hamstrung, but Adrien Odechino, who hopefully has said that correct, he's been able to give you about 10 points per game. It's a Brown team that's only shooting about 31.5% from three, but Jeremiah Jenkins, he shoots about 44% from the outside, 8 points, 2 steals per contest, and then you've been able to have Landon Lewis come back in the last 4 games, and he's been able to supply the team with 13 points per game. It hasn't really led to a whole lot more offense, but I do think that it's going to yield some results moving forward, especially against a Bryant team that they just don't necessarily have great backcourt play. With Bryant, they're going to allow for a lot of clean possessions. They're only generating about 9.8 turnovers per game. That is a bottom 50 mark in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. This Bryant team has been shooting just 27.5% from three. I think there's going to be a little bit of room for improvement there. You got Quincy Allen, a former top 150 recruit, give you 10.5 points, 5.5 boards, a steal and a half, a block and a half per contest. So good versatility there. And Timofey Radulski has been able to give you 12.5 points, comes in from overseas as a freshman, and he's been solid. And Ty Tabalas as a freshman, he's been able to shoot about 35% from 3-point range as well. In the end, I do think that Brown should be a relatively sizable favorite here. It is a Bryant team that has just been very sloppy with the ball with this Bryant team as well. They are currently outside the top 225 in terms of rebound percentage. I think that Landon Lewis turns the tide. So set Brown as an 8-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay that number made by total 8-132, so I'm also in on this total under. 306-571, 306-572, it is South Carolina State, and they are going to be on the road facing off against Bethune-Cookman. Bethune-Cookman is a 10.5 to an 11.5 point favorite. Total on this game, it is 148 to a 148.5, and it's at a total of a 153.5. I do like the over. You've got a South Carolina State team that's outside the top 275 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis, but also a team that they very much are content to run. They're 55th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. With Bethune-Cookman, this team has been looking to play a little bit more controlled. They're hovering around about 200th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But after last season, you were able to get really good versatility out of South Carolina State. You had hockey style line changes, a nice tam end rotation. They pretty much lose all but two of those guys. And I have to wonder how they're going to be able to stand up to Ontario Morris. Morris has been able to do a good job, give this team 14 plus points per game. Not necessarily going inferno mode from 3-point range or anything like that, but I mean, he's been able to do a good job in terms of helping out an offense that has been outside the top 225 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, but this team is playing the monsters on seemingly a night in, night out basis. They were able to get a road win against Ohio. They hold in there against Dayton. I recognize that in their last game against Indiana, that was a little bit less than savory, but still, in this game, they should be able to dominate the boards. You've got Daniel Ruzon, who's been able to do a solid job, give this team about 5 boards, 11.5 points per game. You've got Heedy Squared and Jacoby Heedy, along with Quinton Heedy, who have been able to combine for 9 rebounds, about 26 to 27 points per game out of these two guys as well. And Ariel Bland had a slow start to the season. Now he's been able to give you about 5.5 rebounds per game. So Bethune-Cookman should certainly be able to win that battle down low. Now, South Carolina State has been playing a little bit better recently. They're still rough in darn near every department. They're outside like the top 300 darn near everything. But that said, they had to begin the season Cameron Clark, a transfer from Cal State Bakersfield at 6'10". Out of the fold, he's been able to get the team 9 points, 4.5 boards in the 5 games that he's played. You got Owen Bronson, who's been able to give you 13.5 points per game. And for South Carolina State, the scoring has been picking up for them a little bit. They have been able to break the 66-point barrier in pretty much each of their last 4 games. So I do think that they can do their part in terms of being able to push this total over. So I did set a total of a 153.5. I'm going to be in on the over. And then you got Gene Johnson, who's been able to give you 3.5 assists per game for the South Carolina State team as well. But I do think that Bethune-Cookman should be able to go out there. They should be able to just pick apart a defense that has been 363rd in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage, and a South Carolina State team that is very much turning the ball over outside the top 300 in terms of ball security. So, did set a line of 17.5. I'm going to be willing to lay with Bethune-Cookman and do like this total over as well. 306-573, 306-574. High point hopes to not be a low point as they're going to be playing with NJIT, and NJIT does find themselves as a pretty good-sized underdog here of 26.5 to 28 points. 155 to 156 is the total, and with high points set them as a favorite of 23.5 points. So I'm going to be willing to take the points. NJIT is getting Sebastian Robinson back, who he was their top returning scorer from a season ago. He missed like 3 full games. He hasn't necessarily been 100% in a lot of them as well. That's a big reason why his numbers have been a little bit slumping this year with 7.5 points per game, but he has looked much better recently. Double figures in 3 out of the last 4 games. He's never been a great 3-point shooter. His career about 20.5% 3-point shooter, and with this NJIT team as a whole, they shoot about 32.5% from the outside. It's an NJIT team that's a little bit stronger on defense rather than on offense, as well, the offense is right now outside the top 300 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. They do face off against a High Point team that is allowing a lot of second and third chances. High Point is 301st in the country in terms of defensive rebound percentage. They're allowing teams to be able to grab a little bit under 34% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. That said, this has been a High Point team that has been relatively mid-tempo this year, but very much high-powered with regards to their offense. Last year, before the coaching change, they were a top 40 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Not quite there, as they were number 3, but still 24th in the country in terms of points per possession. You've got one main holdover from a season ago, Chase Johnson. He's been able to do a pretty nice job in terms of being able to pump it in there from 3, a career 40% 3-point shooter. One trick pony, but that one trick is very good. Rob Martin, the top scorer from Southeast Missouri State, is supplying 14 points, 5.5 assists per game. Cameron Fletcher spent some time over at Xavier and Florida State, 19 points, 8.5 rebounds. He's done a great job there. And then we've got nice ancillary pieces like a Scotty Washington, who comes over from Cal State Northridge. He's been able to spy the team with about 8 points per game. It's a bunch that does a nice job in terms of not turning the ball over as well. Only about 9.5 turnovers per game. And they themselves have been a top 30 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis with NJIT. I do think that they're going to be able to do an okay job of folding up on the glass with Ari Fulton being able to give you about 7 boards, 7 points per game. Malachi Arrington, he's been able to spy the team with about 6 rebounds per game as well. But this has been a team that's been outside the top 300 in terms of ball security. So, do you think that this is going to be a sloppier game? I just don't think that you're going to be able to get an over in this spot because, like I said, with High Point, even though they've been very efficient on the offensive end, not necessarily an up-tempo team, and NJIT is not really a team that's looking to push tempo as well, about 178th in terms of total possessions per game. So, set a total of 149.5. I like the under and 24-plus with NJIT. 306-575, 306-576. McNeese is going to be playing us to Northwestern State, and Northwestern State does find themselves as a underdog of 17 to 18.5 points. 141 to 142 is the total, and with McNeese, I did set them as a 17.5-point favorite. So here at 18+, I'm going to be willing to take those points with Northwestern State. For Northwestern State, certainly they're going to be up against it against a McNeese team that they're relatively slow and controlled outside the top 270 in terms of total possessions per game. That'll have this Northwestern State team very much at home, as they're not necessarily a team that's looking to push a lot of tempo either. 261st in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But that said, with regards to this McNeese squad, you've been able to get a lot of production out of Larry Johnson, a former top 100 recruit who's been able to supply the team with about 17 points per game. He is not necessarily a guy that's going to light you up from three-point range or anything like that, but you've been able to get a lot out of Javon Garcia, one of your main holdovers from the season ago, 13.5 points per game. Right now, he's shooting 44% from three. McNeese as a whole, they're only shooting about 31% from the outside. We should see some positivity there. They have a much stronger low-post team. They're a top 75 team with their own two-point shooting percentage, a top 40 team in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage. Now, they are getting dump trucked down the glass. They are outside the top 330 in terms of defensive rebound percentage, and I do think that that's what's going to help this Northwestern team hold in there. Obviously, losing Jared Colonel from a season ago, he was a really good shot blocker. That hurts them quite a bit, and for Northwestern State, it is a team that's in quite a bit of transition down low, but you do return Micah Thomas, who's been able to just really run the offense. 18 points, 2.5 assists per game. This has been a squad that has been able to do a pretty solid job in terms of being able to bomb it from three at 35.5% from three-point range. Willie Williams coming back is absolutely massive as well, because this is a Northwestern team that has been getting absolutely dump-trucked on the glass. He just returned in their last game against Southern. He provided 12 points, 9 rebounds. He's their main rebounder that returns from a season ago. Last year gave the team 6 points, 7.5 boards. That provides a little bit more rough and tumble to be able to hold in this game against McNeese. A McNeese team that has quite a bit of versatility. You've got Kawari Duel, has been not necessarily give you a ton of scoring, but he gives out 5 assists. He'll give you 4 rebounds, but I do think that Izzy Miles, who comes over from Tarleton, he was able to generate over a steal per contest over there, is going to be a help out. Do think that you get a relatively controlled game with McNeese being a very slow team, and this is a Northwestern State squad that they themselves does still leave something to be desired down low. But that said, I do think that with Northwestern State now getting Williams back in the fold, they do just enough to hold in their semi-total at a 140.5. So here at the 141, 142, I like the under and the points with Northwestern State. We wrap things up with 306-577-306-578. UConn is going to be playing us East Texas A&M. East Texas A&M is a underdog of 37.5 points. Your total on this game, it is 139.5 to 140.5. So UConn is a 38.5 point favorite. So I'm all the way up to 38 with UConn. It's an East Texas A&M team that just leaves a whole heck of a lot of something to be desired in terms of their perimeter play. This is an East Texas A&M team that is well outside the top 300 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. They've honestly been an okay team in generating turnovers over the last few seasons, as they're back at the top 75 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They shoot 36% from three overall this season, but much of that came against non-Division One competition, against actual D1 teams. They've had their struggles, to say the least, and this is an East Texas A&M team that, while they do a nice job in terms of generating turnovers, they're outside the top 275 in terms of their own ball security. And for East Texas A&M, I do think that they're going to have a lot of struggles against a UConn team that just has so many guys. They're able to pound the boards, getting Terrace Reed back, who's been very rock solid in his 8.5 rebounds, 15.5 points per game is big. You've got Alex Caravan, who's been all around the block, 13.5 points, 5.5 boards, 2.5 assists. He's a guy that is right now shooting 46% from three. Do think that that goes downward a little bit, but you tell that Malachi Smith has been able to do a nice job in terms of just being able to find his role with this team. He was the main facilitator over at Dayton last year, and he's mostly come off the bench. He's been able to give the team about 6 points, 4 assists per game for a UConn team that is a top 85 team in terms of taking care of the ball. UConn is allowing teams only shoot 26% from 3-point range. They've been a top 25 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and for East Texas A&M, you've been able to have Ronnie Harrison come over from Tarleton State, give the team 14 points, 4.5 rebounds per game, but you don't have a single guy in the roster that gives you over 5 boards per contest. Michael Florian, he's been able to give you 4.9 rebounds per game. He was over at St. Bonaventure as a 6'11 big man 8 seasons ago, but I don't think that he's got much of a shot to be able to hold in there against all the UConn bigs. And I do think that this is going to be a sloppy game with East Texas A&M really turning the ball over left and right. And I do think that UConn, even though they don't necessarily play fast, UConn is back outside the top 225 in terms of total possessions per game. You've got an East Texas A&M team that they're mid-tempo. They're about 162nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But I do think that UConn, just with their offensive efficiency, helps you out with this over. So I set my total at 142.5 here at the 140.5. Like that over, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 38 with UConn. And that'll wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, whatever you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at gunit_81. Keep in mind, Larry Sam, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm with you guys with fixing analysis on every single game, every single day. So I will be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.